Okay. Turn to Matthew chapter 10. We're in a series called the Master's Class on Pioneering, going through Matthew 10, and is looking at different issues that are involved in pioneering. Brian, you want to read Matthew 10, 11 through 15? Where are we at? And Vince reads Psalm 37:23. Okay. So one of the when they train pilots, we have some pilots in our church, Bob Allen, different ones. Part of training is not simply learning how to fly. You have to learn what to do when things go wrong. Every pilot has in their training, they have stall training, meaning they'll get them up in the air and the instructor will deliberately shut the airplane off. Because you don't want somebody who only knows what to do when things go right. The key is, what do you do when things go wrong? That's a very important issue. So Jesus, in this scripture, it's interesting to me that he doesn't just prepare them for success, is he actually prepares them, what if things don't go well? And that is a very important issue. So this lesson's called Shaking the Dust, Matthew 10, 11 through 15.
However, a city or town you enter, inquire who is in it is worthy, and stay there till you go out. And when you go into a household, greet it. If the household is worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it is not worthy, let your peace return to you. And whoever will not receive you nor hear your words, when you depart from that house or city, shake off the dust from your feet. Assuredly, I say unto you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city.
Shaking the dust. Let's talk about the reality of rejection. So it is possible to have an unrealistic view of life and an unrealistic view of ministry. And that is that because I'm doing right or because I'm called, then God is with me. And some people, they think that that means I will always be a success. So if you in life think that you're going to win every battle, if you're going to win all the time, then you're failing to take into account spiritual warfare. The enemy fights. That's the real issue. And the Bible's honest about this, that this involves warfare. You fail to take into account personal limitations. Ministry is filled with things that you have never done before. And especially in pioneering, you first go into the ministry, there is so much that you have never had to deal with in life, and now suddenly it's thrown on you. And I would love to believe that under our superior ministry, everybody will be prepared for every eventuality, but that's just not the case. There's no way to do that. So if you're doing things you've never done before, there's a possibility that you might not do it so well all the time. So you're going to learn to do it, or hopefully you're going to learn to do it and do it well, but that's just like you got to factor that in. Then you have to, some people fail to take into account human will. Is we are in the people business. And so if you're in the people business, the people you minister to, they have a will. They don't have to do right. And you will discover that many won't do right. That's what our scripture is dealing with. Is Jesus is honest. He says, not everybody is going to groove on you. Not everybody's going to wildly do backflips because you're in town. And that's just the way it is. Every single pastor has right now, or has had people in the past that don't like them, that don't receive them, that literally reject them. That's just, you have to factor that in. And so so Jesus is saying, in telling us these things, part of your theology, the belief about God, has to include the possibility of failure. So Jesus is telling them this because he doesn't want them to be blindsided. He doesn't want them to be absolutely shocked, like, how could this ever happen if he runs into people who reject? Jesus Christ had people, even some regions, that completely rejected him, right? So if Jesus Christ, that's what he tells in other scriptures, is if the master has people who reject him, how do you think you're going to escape that? That's just life. So I'm not talking about being defeatist. I send guys to succeed. I'm not talking, there are guys that go out and, you know, you've heard me tell a million times the story of my friend, so-called, that told me I was going to die. I'm not talking about someone discouraging you before you even begin. But this is the same with pilots. Bro, you fly, you're going to die. That's not the point. It's just you got to factor that sometimes engines quit. Sometimes things break. So you just have to factor that in. And that is very, very important. Okay, let's talk about being defiled by dust. So, in this, Jesus prepares them practically in a number of areas. So, part of the problem is you have guys that they have what we call the no surrender syndrome. So, when faced with what Jesus Christ says, is this, there is a lack of response, obvious unresponsiveness. So there are some guys that refuse to factor in the idea of changing in any way. You've heard it preached, or you know the story about the Japanese soldier 40 years after the war in the Philippines. He's still hiding in a cave. He won't let go of the fight. You know, meanwhile, his family and friends have moved on. They got houses, careers, children, grandchildren. He's still hiding in a cave because he's not letting go. And I've seen that. So, what you don't want is you don't want it to become a matter of pride, right? Is by golly, is that if I am here, I have guys that they tell me, God told me to come. Well, I can't speak for God in that sense, but all I know is that if you've been there for 15 years and you still have three people, we need to consider something else. That's common sense. So you know, the problem is you make it a matter of pride. You know, we don't run from the devil, brother. Okay, then just stay there and let him chew on you until you die. So what happens then in a number of issues is that it's possible to lose sight of your calling when faced with difficulties. So the devil's a master of mind games. So you have spiritual warfare, which he causes. You have human will, that's people. Then, of course, your limitations. But what the devil does is he makes it be all about you. The reason why there are troubles, the reason why people backslid, it's you. What, you handed them the drugs? So, but we take this very personal. This is part of the problem in ministry is you take everything as a personal vote. Someone doesn't get saved, that's a vote on me. Someone backslide, that's a vote on me. Someone chooses to not do the will of God, that's a vote. That's not fair. So there is human responsibility in ministry, but what the devil often does is he says, if it's not working, it's because you're not called. So he assaults the fact of your calling. So there are guys that they wrestle continually with the issue of, am I called? Calling is something really you should work out before you go in the ministry. You should already know that you're called before you go, so that when you go out, if it's not working, if there are things you're doing wrong, find out so you can fix it. If it's a matter of you've chosen a poor building location, find out so we can fix it. But you should not be coming back to the issue of, I don't know whether I'm called. Why did you want to sort that out on the field after spending volumes of money disrupting your life, ministries back home? So that's not an issue of calling. Jesus doesn't say to them when he's sending them, and if it doesn't work out, that's proof that you're not called. That's not what he says. Okay, so the problem here, Jesus says, is he doesn't want people to become defiled by dust. Very, very interesting statement here, and that is shaking off the dust. So the picture is, of course, with shoes you've seen in the in our building program, part of the problem of remodeling and building while we're still functioning here is that you track mud in. In this case, it's dust. You track it in. So they've just vacuumed, you have nice carpet, and now the dust gets everywhere. So Jesus is saying this is the danger of ministry. So you come up against people who don't receive you, you're struggling with response, you become dirtied, as it will, and so now you track that into every area of life. And this is dangerous. So they change, it changes how they view other people. You know, because you had one rebel doesn't mean that everybody's a rebel. Because you had one person who was rude to you doesn't mean that everybody's a jerk. And this is part of the problem. You take it personal. I just had a was in Jacksonville, and one of the guys was telling me about talking to a friend of his, and the guy would, you know, they did this, they did that, and it's like, bro, don't take it personal. It's not a vote on you. It's not every bad decision people make isn't a vote on you. You know, people do bad because they want to sometimes. So, but the problem is when you start taking it personal, now you start looking and it's like, are you going to burn me too? You're going to burn me? And so that's the dust now taints, or you bring it into your marriage. You take it out on your wife. You're dirtying the home because of the frustrations of ministry, or that we have the fact, the real issue is you have guys that it's not working at that point in time. Come back for redirection, get refreshed. So one of the factors of life is some guys do not process what Jesus is saying here. So this is an absolute life-destroying event because it didn't work. Therefore, I'm a failure. You think everybody in the whole church is sitting around talking about you all day long. You're not that important, I promise you. You know, and so... So that in a worst case scenario, if you don't get rid of the dust, then what you do is you put your dirt on other people. And this is often what I see is then you get somebody else who's excited about doing the will of God, and you got to make sure that you put all of your unbelief and all your fear and odd views of ministry and people into them. So Jesus says, shake off the dust. Don't let the dust ruin every area of life. Let's talk finally about a correct response. So in this scripture, Jesus says, sometimes if it's not working, it is wisest to move on. Now, this is especially true in large cities. The area, and we talked about this in an earlier lesson, the area you're in a big city can make a major difference. And especially if you're going into a city that you don't know, it is very difficult for you to go into a large city that you've never been into and get your head around where you should be. And you have different cultures, you have different things that everybody knows who lives there, but you don't know, you're an outsider. You look at something in the daytime, it's like, this is awesome. You go at night, man. You're going to hear horror music in there. It's a bad, bad scene. You don't know that. Different places of reputations. You know, there's just all kinds of things that. So, the area. You know, we talked about this. If you locate your church in the ghetto, then probably no one's going to come but the ghetto people. That probably is a mistake. The building sometimes. I've seen guys, they were struggling. I didn't see their building when they opened. And so I was like, Pastor, the devils must be big here. And then I realized to find this building you would need, you know, GPS, and angels would have to guide you to even find it. You know, it's tucked away. There's no signage. It's, you know, up four flights of stairs. So it's like, that was hurting you. So Jesus says, sometimes, this doesn't mean that, you know, I tried it for 2 months, not working, let's get a new building. But sometimes this is wise. And Jesus gives advice, move on. Don't beat your head against the wall for the rest of your life in a place that's unresponsive. That's wisdom. So that can be in two different ways. Number one is sometimes it's best to move into a new location in the same city. That may be valid, whether that's a building, whether that's an entirely new area. That is wisdom. The second thing sometimes is it is sometimes wise just to, you know, now we're maybe not talking about a big city, but maybe in a smaller place and there is zero response. Maybe we could look at a different city altogether. That may be wise. You look at that sometimes. Or sometimes it is because of what's going on in the man and the lack of response or the lack of ability to get finances, different things. Maybe it's best for you to be redirected so you can be healed up and focused again. So all of this is just factoring in. You know, we've had through the years, we've had people in our fellowship, some, they haven't taken this wise advice. It's like, guys, they're beating their head against the wall for years and years. It's like, well, why don't you come? And they just wind up leaving the fellowship. It's like, why would you do that? Because they didn't factor in what Jesus said here. They were defiled by dust. Or you have guys, and when guys come back and they're asking me, what should I do when I come back? Is you should come back like you went out. You know, we pick people because they prayed and witnessed and were involved and had a good attitude. What should I do when I come back? Do the same. That's what I expect. Be a blessing so you can function. God will help you. And so there are guys, if they're defiled, they don't do that. You guys, they don't pray, they don't witness, they're not involved. That's not helpful. So those kinds of things are not a pastoring issue. That's a salvation issue. We do those things because we're Christians, not because we're pastors, right? You should read your Bible because you're a Christian, yes. Not because you're a pastor. Prayer, you know, evangelism, whatever. And so the balance then, of course, would be found. That's why you need a pastor. Is a pastor can help sort through, is that location, is that something in you that needs work, is that a city, building, so keeping contact and giving him as much information, because moving in itself is not an answer. Jesus doesn't say as soon as you have a problem, split, because some people they'll have the same result in a new location with more money, of course. So in this, Jesus says the necessary action, he says, shake the dust off your feet. I actually knew a couple from a church. They were in the same church as me in Perth. They did this literally. They beat their head against a wall in this little country town. And when they left, them and the few people with them literally got out of their cars and shook the dust off. So... leaving these people to God. That's the point of it. So, in actual fact, I don't think that really is what Jesus is talking about. He's saying, shake the dust off of you. That's the real issue. The real issue is not that you have the right to then leave town, shake the dust, and say, to hell with all of you. That's not, because if we did that, I know guys that they have done that, and they said, to hell, and then a new guy came in, and he had fantastic revival. So, lo and behold, it wasn't these evil people after all. So, Jesus is simply saying here, shaking the dust is, I'm not letting this event or this section of my life determine my whole future, right? So I've had wins in life. I've had places and times and seasons and ministries that have gone very well. I've also had times where I got my butt kicked. I mean, absolutely. It was a total and complete fiasco. But shaking the dust is I'm not going to be 95 still talking about that one era of life that didn't go well. That's not going to be the focus of my life. Sometimes you learn lessons. Say there were things I needed to learn there. Sometimes you say, well, you know, there were some people and some factors that were in place. And sometimes, who knows? There's a mystery factor at work in all of life. But the point is, shaking the dust is you. I'm not going to let this event, this era, this place ruin the rest of my life. So he says, shake the dust. So you can only do that if your significant comes from God and not ministry. If you don't deal with your rejection issues and you think you're going to solve all of your insecurities if people call you pastor and you get to make a report at conference, please don't go in the ministry. Ministry is painful for people who are using it to prop up their egos. Because there are so many things in ways that assault your ego in ministry. There are things that can build your ego, but there's lots of things that are assault. So you have to have this. So the understanding is this: my confidence is in God. Is in God. If you shake the dust, there is no wasted time. There are no wasted events with God. Even failure is not a wasted. Psalm 37:23.
The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his way.
Okay, the steps of a good man or of a righteous man, they are ordered, planned. So there's nothing that's going to happen in your life that's going to catch God by surprise. Nothing, absolutely nothing. And what you discover is that even what you think is wasted, God uses it, whether that's to work on you, to prepare his will. So ultimately, I trust God. If this doesn't go well, I'm going to regroup. I'm going to refocus my mind. But God is going to use this for his purposes in life. If you do that, if you have confidence, my confidence in life is not in me. My confidence is in God. I may do well. I may not do well. I may succeed. I may not succeed. But if I have confidence in God, then I can factor all those things in. And there are things I can leave with God. Okay. Open for questions or comments. Go ahead, Zach.
How do you discern when it's time to move on?
Well, that's what you'd have to do with a pastor. That's the point. That's why you want to stay in contact with a pastor, because he can help you. And you want to be honest. You don't. Some guys, they don't. They only will contact the pastor to give them a good report, which is foolish. Because that's not giving him accurate information, right? So, a pastor will help you with that. Because that's the point, is when you're disoriented, you often will make bad decisions unless you have outside help. Yep. Yeah.
When you're dealing with people, at what point do you begin to take it personally or realize maybe that is a reflection of what you're doing? Are there warning signs, or is that kind of... In other words, if you're seeing people you deal with converts and you're concerned that might be coming from you, I take everything personally, but...
Yeah, I know what you mean. I would say in several different things, Jake, I think is that, again, when you're learning, is in contact with a pastor. He can help you. If you explain this is what's going on with them, this is what I was saying to them, this is the decision they made, then sometimes a pastor can guide you, because that'll be life lessons for the future. On the other hand, then you have things people say that are exactly the same. I'm trying to think of examples. Sometimes you have guys that what people say to them is it's statements like the idea that they're pushing too hard. You know, they're pushing and pushing. And so you listen And I think then also as you ask God, if you have a heart that is right, you ask God in everything. God, what do I need to learn here? If I'm doing something wrong, I need you to show me. Because isn't it in God's best interest to show you things that you need to know, right? So it's not like God will hide from you. And so sometimes if we have that openness of heart, our automatic response should not be, yeah, because they're devils. Not everybody can be a devil. Sometimes that is a lack of dominion that we're working on to gain dominion. But if we're asking God, then I think he's able to speak to us. And I've had guys that they come to the realization, God deals with them. It's like, the problem was I was just simply pushing them too hard, for instance, or speaking to them, rudely or, whatever. Yeah. Somebody else.
Taken over a church. Uh-huh. Maybe they're having. When? How sensitive? With this question. Obviously, changes need to be made. You come into a situation, they're in a bad part. What is the rule of? Do you have a rule of thumb about when to start making change?
Yeah, we give guys a general rule of thumb is that. It all depends, of course, but our general rule of thumb is you shouldn't be making major changes for a year. Now, there are certain things that, if they've got a stripper sings on the stage, perhaps that should be changed sooner. There are extremes of. I mean, I'm sorry, that just has to be changed. But in a general rule of thumb is that. My first bit of guidance that I give people is you cannot blow up the whole church trying to make a correction. That's first of all. So there are people here and they're not, standards would be an obvious one. These people, they're not observing standards of ministry. It's like, look, dude, you just got there. If you got there last week and you start trying to jam and implement change, you're going to blow up the whole church. It won't make sense. And then, of course, then you have factors of people that are, we are fair. I often teach pastors this. We are fair in pastoring, meaning I don't treat you different than you because I like you. I don't treat you different because you're related to me. You are fair, but we actually don't treat everybody equal. In other words, if I had two people that they were causing problems in the church, there are some people there causing problems, but they have zero power. Right? So you have just an odd bod who's in the church. They're obnoxious to everybody, whatever. So if I deal with that guy, it's not like the entire church is going, what? But then you have somebody else, they're causing problems, and everybody in the church is related to them. Or they're on the church council or something. So you can't treat those people the same. You're fair. I'm not being mean to one and not to the other. But it's just I'm going to have to be wiser in how I deal. So that's a general rule of thumb. So we say to guys, and then, of course, kinds of changes. There are changes that are not going to be, they're not going to make a difference, right? Something's broken in the church. If you fix it, that's not going to hurt the church. You see what I'm saying? There are things that you can change. I'm going to clean the church. No one's going to complain. Like, what? We don't like cleanness. We like dirt. So those kinds of changes are fine. But when you are changing, service structure, when you're changing... in so many different ways, there are things that just, it's not helpful, but neither should you blow up the church over it. So you've got to gain time. You got to gain credibility. What I say to people is if you will, number one, if you'll serve them. If you're pastoring, you'll counsel them, you'll pray for them, they'll have crises, you'll go visit them in the hospital, you'll talk them off the ledge at times. Everything like that gives you credibility, number one. Number two, the more people you get saved, and that's especially true, you take over a church that stalled, if you get people saved and the church grows, you have greater credibility, right? And so that is the second factor. You got to get people saved because now you're gaining credibility. The third is simply time. You can't make decisions too soon. And so there are things that, you know, guys tell me, did you know that the previous pastor was? It's irritating to me, but I still say you shouldn't deal with it yet. You know, unless it's immorality, of course. Immorality would be, this has to be dealt with straight away, regardless of what it costs. So, but our general rule of thumb, we just kind of say in general, is don't make major changes for a year. And then you factor in all of these other things to see whether it's literally going to be a year. Somebody else?
Pastor, as an evangelist, sometimes you'll go into a church and be the pastor struggling and going through difficulties, and you might recognize something that he could do or help him in some way. Would you address that, or would you leave that alone?
Mostly leave it alone. I mean, that doesn't mean that you would never say anything to someone, but I've learned through the years, not everybody who says to me, if you see anything, you just tell me. Some people tell me that it's not true. I just smile and say, okay. So, you do have, and again, is you have simple pioneering issues that it's not, you're not giving life direction. I thought of this the other day. I thought of the very first time I had a visiting speaker. I'm green as grass pioneering. And so I took him a love offering, and I gave him the love offering in change. I just had no clue. That was something like, bro, put it in the bank, write a check. He's like, oh. that's just... So that kind of thing, there's simple pioneering things are just, a pioneer may, you can say very simple things that it's not change. You're not giving life direction. You're not directing their marriage. You're not telling them how to pastor in general. Just, this is so simple. Maybe don't do that like that. That may be acceptable. But that also is the frustration, as you appreciate. The advantage of evangelizing is you don't have to deal with people's problems. That's an advantage. Disadvantage is, of course, you also have no power to make changes or to help people. So that's frustrating. You're going in and it's on them as far as their preparation level and all that. So you just have to factor it in. Yep.
Yep. Would these principles apply in other aspects of life than just pioneering?
Sure. Yep. Yeah, there's all kinds of things in life you can't take personal. Yeah, so yep, that'd be true sometimes in ministries, sometimes in relationships, sometimes in just move on. That's the best thing. And that doesn't mean move cities, but mentally, yep.
So what about going over and sometimes you have to take over a church that might be in that position of like 15 years and still three people?
Mm-hmm.
So, I know obviously you talked about credibility before and not making changes right away, but, what should be your mindset going into a church like that, knowing, sometimes they have a reputation of, this church gets small for
them? Yeah. So, I have done that, and I've taken over a church three times that was struggling, and my focus was preaching faith, 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 faith. God can help us. God can do it. There's nothing God can't do. And just, I'm preaching faith and dominion and those things. No, we rule here. This is not right, And getting them to believe. And that's the key. That's my focus. So I'm not trying to attack and say that other guy was a sucker because he struggled. My focus is God is good. I'm lifting their eyes on God. And getting them to fight. Because most people want... they don't want, in rare cases, I know of this, that there are rare cases that people, the church is not growing, and they don't want it to grow. That's very rare. They like a tight-knit little thing, and that is especially true when you have somebody that they're the absolute star of the church, so they would resist anybody new coming in. That's a problematic. Most people, it's just they're discouraged, they don't know any better, and they like it. If you give them some hope, they'll pull with you. And you start with the men. I always say, you want to change a church, start with the men. Get the men. We're going to fight. Men like to fight. There's, you put them in there. If they get somebody who gets them believing, they'll fight with you. They'll pull with you. So just faith. That's the key. I think you motivate people more by inspiration than you do by correction. Instead of coming in and telling them everything they're doing wrong, you tell them how good God is and how God's going to help them. It inspires them. That's my approach in life. Anybody else?
I can honestly say, after pastoring for many years, being in Samoa for 10 years missionary, and then attempting to pioneer in Paducah, there came that moment where we talked at the conference that I needed to come back for any direction, and I said, what do I need to do? And you said, you need to humble your pride and your attitude. And I can honestly say, after this last year being here, that this is the best thing that has ever happened to me. And like you said, it's not just coming back and doing nothing, but I feel a sense of destiny still, and that I'm living the best of times. I feel like I'm living the dream right now, just being here and moving on. I just want to just insert that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for this.
Yep. Anybody else? All questions of life are answered. My job is done here. I dropped the mic.
Until next week.
I wish it was next week.